Welcome to the Pure Flicks Podcast, a show brought to you by PureFlicks.com. PureFlicks.com, the faith, family, and fun video streaming service. Get ready for uplifting news, scripture, movie reviews, and interviews with some of your favorite actors, authors, and pastors. Let's get started.
Hey, what's going on? It's Billy Hollowell, and welcome to the Pure Flicks Podcast. I am very excited to welcome back to the show today one of the friends of the Pure Flicks Podcast. We have had him on before. His name is Chris Dowling, and one of the reasons that we've had Chris on numerous times is because he is the mind behind so many great films, and the latest of those films is The Man from Nowhere. He is the writer of The Man from Nowhere, and for those who don't know, you know, the person who writes the script, that is the person who is putting the puzzle pieces together of what the story is going to be. And so I always love getting a chance to talk with Chris because he's also been a director. He directed the film Where Hope Grows, and he's done so much in the entertainment space, and he's an incredible storyteller. And today we're going to be talking about The Man from Nowhere, what went into writing it, what the plot line means, and what audiences can take away. So you're going to get a really fun behind-the-scenes look at the movie. You can stream it right now over at PureFlix. Again, it's The Man from Nowhere. And with no further ado, let's welcome Chris to the PureFlix Podcast. Chris Dowling, welcome back to PureFlix Insider. How are you doing today?
Thank you, sir. Doing well, buddy. Doing well.
So we're here to talk about yet another one of your projects. This is a film that you wrote, The Man from Nowhere. I love that. I love that title. Give us the elevator pitch for this film. For those who don't know about it, they haven't seen the trailer, what's the movie about?
Yeah, I think, I forget who said it, but someone said it's the story of the prodigal father, which I thought was really interesting. And it's a New York Times bestselling author, a military veteran who's kind of chased the fame and the book and the just everything that comes along with it, the money, but he really faltered as a father with his relationship with his son. And now his son is in his 40s, and his son is kind of repeating the sins of his father, where he has put all his life into success and being the best he can. And his father, they don't really have much of a relationship, but his father calls him and says he's only got a couple months left to live, and he wants to get together. And it's kind of that old cats in the cradle thing where the son doesn't have time, but then the dad shows up on his doorstep. I guess that's kind of a spoiler. That happens midway through the movie.
that's an okay spoiler though, because obviously it sounds like this film, and having seen the different elements of the movie, I don't want to give too much away, but the bulk of it is happening in that relationship between the two of them, right? I mean, that seems to really be the heart of this, which I know a lot of people I would imagine relate to, right? I mean, that's life. We have difficult relationships sometimes with people.
Yeah, it was really cool, man, with some of the screenings we did and stuff, seeing like grown men like weeping and just saying like, man, that was me, or that was my dad, or that was us. Like, so that was really powerful. I mean, and then there's, inside of the story, because he's an author, there's a really cool element where it's following like a film noir sequence about a man, a detective searching for his son. And we kind of get to watch that story play out as well. And that is the final book that our author Herb has written. And it turns out to be kind of a love letter to his son.
So let's talk about that, because you just described something that as a writer, and by the way, I think writers are the most important people, among the most important, if not the most important people in movies, because you are the one, you're building the architecture, the platform on which the movie is going to stand, right? And you just described a scenario where you have sort of, you have the main plot line and you have this other sort of plot line going on. How did you come up with that concept, and what was it like to sort of write that in? It's sort of two storylines that are tied together.
Yeah, it was really cool. So I, it's a big testament to the director, Matt Green, and he also was a co-writer and co-producer with me. And we knew we wanted this father. So the crazy thing is, we knew we only had 8 days to shoot this movie. Okay,
Hold on. You filmed this entire movie in 8 days.
8 days, the whole movie, like literally from day one to day eight was all we rolled cameras. So just the idea of that was just bonkers to me. But Matt had faith in it, and Matt knew we could do it. And he also works with the Masters University. He teaches film over there. And so we were able to utilize students in key areas to come on set and learn while we had, you know, all of the department heads and everyone else's professionals, obviously, because we would have obviously never made it through if it was like a student film. But and you would never know. I mean, I've got people that are, it looks like $1 million. Like, it looks great. So really, I mean, the whole process for me, first of all, so that's mind blowing. But when you only know you have 8 days and you have limited, locations, you have to think very contained, right? And so it's almost like Master Chef or whatever it is, Iron Chef, where they go, here's the ingredients, go make something. So we kind of looked at what we had around us and we said, okay, well, let's build the story around that. We know it's going to have to be very character driven because we don't have time to do anything other than really, you know, have those moments. And which was fun for me as a writer, because that's what, to me, is the power, is watching this relationship and these characters build and you caring about them. So we kind of had that storyline and we knew we wanted what we wanted from the father son. And then we're like, all right, cool. We've never seen this. And especially in the faith world, we're like, what if we now put this other story unfolding inside of it? And then, so strangely, we had written a Western that was beats of a Western. We had a ranch set up in Santa Clarita. We were going to shoot it. And it was like 2 weeks before we got a call and it was like, Showtime booked out the ranch. We can't let you guys have it anymore. So then we were like, uh-oh. So honestly, then I pulled it all back and I quickly rewrote and started changing it and crafting it into a film noir and a detective looking for a son with gangsters. It actually turned out, I think, probably, you know, better. It's one of those happy accidents. Like, it really actually turned out super cool. And it was funny because like one of those things where the first time we wrote it through, it was kind of just like pieces. Like, it was just pieces of a story. And then we're like, God, but it connects in so many ways. And like, if you come out of this one, that storyline into this scene, it, you know, punches that scene up. And so it really just started spiderwebbing through everything and the way that those two started intertwining, because the father and son, it's, you know, they're there, but they can't really talk to each other, right? So it's almost like the son starts reading this book to understand his father. And as he's reading the book and watching that story play out, he begins to understand what he means to his father, which he's never heard his father say. And I think that's the payoff as you watch their relationship grow. I'm getting little goosebumps talking about it because it was really a powerful thing. And again, I've seen it with countless men now that it's really touching a nerve. There's a process in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of the human experience. I think a lot of us, I know, have those struggles with loved ones. Maybe it's not a father, but for a lot of people it is. And, you know, there's a lot of emotion in that, which you capture so beautifully in the film. And just to kind of backtrack a little bit, it is interesting to hear you as a writer. And I think, you know, fans would love to know this. You have to adapt to what's available to you, where you can film, the set, the context, what, you know, how much money you have, the time you have to do it. It's incredible to me that you filmed an entire movie in 8 days and that you had that challenge of going back to the drawing board. And I'm sure this happens on every film to some degree, to rewrite scenes to match that. Are there ever times where you find yourself, because it seemed pretty seamless here that you found another alternative? It wasn't the Western. It was this other, you know, sort of, you know, way of showing it. But are there ever times where you find yourself saying, oh, no, what am I going to do? And you're sort of stuck in that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, that's also kind of the I think that happens on set a lot. Like, obviously, you've written certain things, right? And I think that's where, like, the director and being collaborative comes into vision. And again, Matt, the director, he crushed this and the team crushed it. So like, but like a lot of times, you know, it's the way it's written and yeah, then you show up and you're like, well, I don't have a, insane asylum, you know, like we have in here. So what else can, you know, what? And so, I mean, it is constantly like changing because you have to be resourceful, especially when you're, you know, dealing with films that don't have, you know, giant budgets. Like, and so, but that's, to me, that's so much fun. I mean, it's so much fun to make that happen. And like, you get to discover so many things. Whereas, you know, when there's so many cooks in the kitchen and there's all the money in stake and everybody wants to sign off on it, it's like a lot of times it can get very cookie cutter. Whereas in all of my movies, I like to just kind of let the actors play and stuff. Like, as long as I get what I want, then, I mean, to me, it's much more fun and everyone enjoys it. And especially like on Run the Race, Chris Kilman and I, we decided you know, we weren't going to use a big, big lights or any lights really. All we had was a little LED board, to give like little, so we didn't even have a generator out there. And, so everything was like lit naturally, or was we, pre-rigged it to be practical. So like we built in like the lights coming down, or we, you know, we had to cut holes in doors to make the window bigger, 'cause we knew we'd need to push more light through there off a bounce card. And I mean, that was a big testament to Chris, but like, it was so cool because then once we had the whole place lit, it was kind of like a stage where I was like, okay, here's your lights, actors, here's where you can get into, like, let's go have some fun and figure out how you guys want to get through this. And so like, to me, the energy is so much cooler and better when everyone's being creative. And so on something like this, for sure, you're like, okay guys, here's what we got. How are we doing this?
Yeah. Being creative. I mean, that's the word, you just said it. That's what you seem to thrive on. And you know, speaking of that, you obviously are dealing with very personal, difficult issues in The Man from Nowhere, familial issues, the emotions that come with that. Where did you derive the inspiration to create those characters? How did you conjure that up and bring that into the script?
You know, it's funny because Matt and I both have really good relationships with our fathers. Like, it wasn't like, but I think, you know, we were right in thinking about it. It's like, it's funny, like, where hope grows, like, you know, the main character is, you know, a recovering addict. And it was, I had multiple guys come up to me that were recovering addicts, and they were like, man, you must have gone through it, huh? And I was like, no, that's, you know, but I'm empathetic to people who have. I think the key to being a great writer is, and I'm not saying I'm a great writer, but I think the key to being a great writer is
you are a great writer. I'll say it. You don't have to say it. You're a great writer.
Thank you. That's very, very kind of you, Billy. But is being empathetic and observing people. And so that's why I feel like I've, you know, like Blue Miracle, like all the characters minus Dennis Quaid were Mexican. You know what I mean? But like, so I think if you are observant and you're obviously empathetic, then I think you can create characters that, because like you said, a lot of it's universal struggles. I might have had a bad relationship with my dad, but I know plenty of people who have. And obviously I've had friends that I've had struggles with, or, you know, in anything like, you know, 16 years of marriage, you're going to have certain times that are the low points and against the high points. So it's like you can pull from all those things and then push it through a lens of whatever your character's looking at. And, you know, and if you can sell it, and, you know, and I think, you know, you and I have had discussions about the authenticity of faith films at times and the characters and the dialogue. And I think that's what I always strive to do, is be able to make it feel authentic and, you know, lived in and gritty. And so that's kind of my jam, man.
Well, you do a great job of it. And all the movies you just listed are films that you've worked on. And it's important to note, too, for those who don't know, you wrote this film, but you're also a director. You've directed. What would you say, I'm just curious, the key difference, just so people understand, between the writing process and the directing process? Because those seem to be two very different things.
It is very different, but it's interesting. And I'm always trying to explain to young writers too, like, so we, like, let's say I write a script, right? Or like, let's take Blue Miracle, for example. So I write the script, it gets greenlit, we have the money to make the movie. And then for this one, they're going to go out to this director, Julio, who did a great job. But once Julio comes on board, it becomes Julio's project, if that makes sense. So it went from the writer, I've handed the baton off. So now my job as the writer primarily is to support the director's vision. So, I mean, it doesn't mean I won't push back and say, hey, man, like, I think we should be doing this, or I think we should be doing that. But ultimately, like, it's now his show. So, you know what I mean? So, like, from that point on, like, whatever Julio wants at the end of the day, he's probably going to get. So that's a tough handoff a lot of times, because there's numerous projects I've written where, you know, you watch the final version of what the director did, and you're like, that's not what it was supposed to be like, or they made changes you're not happy with. But I mean, like, the other thing is, and it's so key, is like casting, like your actors, right? Like, a director is in charge of casting those actors. If you don't cast the right actors, doesn't matter what's on the paper, and if you can't get them to the place they need to be, that's what's so tough about a director, right? Like, basically, if you walk out and you ended up casting a bad actor, you could be, you know, dogged the entire shoot now with that actor, because you're just, they're in, right? And you're screwed, and you're going to have to figure out how to kind of make it work. But again, I think a good director will figure out how to motivate an actor, and ultimately the pressure's off as a writer. to me. Once you pass it off to the director, it's for better, for worse. Like, if they botch it, then that's on them. And if they hit a home run, nobody really goes back and says, wow, man, that writer, he, you know, really killed that one. They don't. They go, hey, that's the director's movie, right? So
that's such a good point. Yeah.
Oh, it is. It's funny because my daughter always gets so mad. She's like, Daddy, they don't appreciate the writers, Daddy. And I'm like, yeah, they don't. And it's okay. But
it's the way it works, right? I mean, but you are the one, you're the architect of the story. And I think that is the part that is so interesting. And again, for all the movies you listed, those are movies that you have been an architect on in some form. And that's incredible to me. Now, I've got to ask you, final question on The Man from Nowhere. As the person who wrote it and brought that story, you were the architect again of it, what is your hope for those who watch that film? Like, what's the big takeaway that you'd be happy with in the audience?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, Matt and I wrote it and together, and we were like, there's, you know, stories of, which I just wanted a story that speaks to reconciliation and to, I mean, so many people are hurting right now. And it was like right when COVID was starting, we were shooting it and things are broken and are you going to get to see people? And it just felt like, man, like, let's just talk about this story where this guy that they might not see each other, but it's like the opposite of COVID. Like, he's going to find a way, you know, to get to his son. And they get to have those, you know, that they get to repair as much as they can, you know, what's been lost over the last 40 years. And so I just think, I mean, and again, I think it speaks a lot to, we have movies about fathers and sons in the faith world, but not really older fathers. Like, it's like, you know, it's like the father and the younger son, or, you know, how am I raising my kids, which totally awesome. But like, we don't have a lot of those ones where it's like, hey, you know, dad doesn't have a lot of time left. How do I fix this? Or how do we make this good before he goes? How do we find peace? And so I think that's what's really been speaking to people is, you know, it feels like a movie that, I think I'll put it this way. The best thing that I ever get is when people watch and they go, there's nothing else like that in this genre. Artistically more so than anything, where it follows the double storylines. It's got the noir beats through it. And then there's the place where, you know, fantasy intersects reality in the film as it progresses, obviously. So that's the takeaway, man. And beyond that, what we discussed earlier, we shot in 8 days. I mean, like, Matt and his team should win an award just for making a movie that looks this good and this big in 8 days.
It's wild.
It is wild. Yeah. It's funny because, you know, I've met with people, and like, I remember the first movie I ever did with like Patrick Warburton and Andy Dick and Jason Alexander and all these guys. Like, we shot it in 15 or 16 days, I think. And that was part of our marketing pitch. Like, we were going out and like, they were doing tours and, you know, the radio tours. And they were like, yeah, it's unbelievable. We shot this in, you know, 15 days. And I was like, that was crazy. We did it. And it turned out good. So the fact that I've now cut that in half, is, I hope I don't cut the next one half. I don't do 4 days next, but I'm saying, but like,
it's gonna be 1 day next time.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the one day shoot. That would really knock down the cost, though. That's like an extended TikTok or something. I think it's just like we're just taking a phone and doing something silly. Man. But I think there's nothing out there like this, and it also is pro military, which I'm, you know, a huge fan of. So. November makes sense, you know, with Veterans Day, and there is Veterans Day, right? Today? No.
Yes.
Today? Yeah. Oh, yeah. We won't be today. You can cut that out.
Yeah.
But anyways, pro-military and, you know, and family values, and that's, you know, I like that stuff, man.
Well, listen, I so appreciate you coming on the show. As always, for those who are watching, make sure you head over to PureFlix and watch The Man from Nowhere. We'll see you again very soon, Chris.
Yes, sir. Later, buddy.
And that was Chris Dowling, the writer of The Man from Nowhere. You can stream the movie right now over at PureFlix. And hey, if you don't have a PureFlix membership, here is the cool thing you can do. You can go over to PureFlix.com and you can get a free 1 week trial so you can watch thousands of the best faith and family-friendly movies, TV shows, original series, and so much more. There is something for the whole family. Check in next week for another episode of the PureFlix podcast. And also be sure to head over to Facebook.com patreon.com/pureflix for more daily inspiring content. We'll see you next week.
That's all for today's podcast. You can follow Pure Flix on Facebook at facebook.com/pureflix and on Twitter at Pure Flix. And be sure to log on today to pureflix.com for thousands of faith and family-friendly movies and TV shows. Thanks for listening to the Pure Flix Podcast.